back to the Meeple Podcast. I'm Bill Price.
And I'm Hollis Biggs.
And this is the Meeple Podcast, the podcast for board game beginners.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're just going to jump in today. The first few episodes here, first couple episodes have been about sort of defining the hobby. And I think we've kind of gotten away from the essence of the podcast, which should be the games.
Yeah. And I can't wait to talk about some of them today.
I'm excited. So I know we've got a whole bunch of gateway games that we want to talk about, but I know number one, one thing we played between the last episode and this episode is finally Ticket to Ride.
Which honestly was a lot different than I was expecting it to be.
Well, you won. By a lot, actually.
We always call it beginner's luck, but I do think while there is some strategy to it, it was a lot of fun. I expected it to be more challenging is maybe the wrong word. Maybe tough one to say here, but I think I expected it to be something where other players were actively working against me, or maybe that they could, I don't know, somehow cast a spell and mess up all my trains and things like that. Very different than what actually happened in Ticket to Ride.
Well, one thing with Ticket to Ride is there's not a lot of things people like do to you, like a take that kind of thing, but the blocking, especially, we played a 4-player game, and a lot of cities only have like a couple ways in and out.
Like Primes, we played the North American version.
The standard Ticket to Ride North America.
Yep. So you've got cities between America and Canada, I think is kind of the realm of where it operates. But it's kind of odd because certain cities on the East Coast will have maybe two entry points. So like Atlanta is really, Charleston.
Weirdly tough to get into.
Tough to get into. I focus most of my trains on the West Coast side of the board. And, cities that you wouldn't think should have 6 points of entry, like Helena, I think was one of them. Yeah, or Winnipeg, I think has a lot.
Helena was one. Denver, Dallas, I think.
Yeah.
Oklahoma City. All those ones in the middle have a lot of ways in and out.
Weirdly huge cities. But that was, I want to say again, beginner's luck here for sure. But that helped me in my gameplay of making sure that every card that I drew, well, of being lucky that every card that I drew ended up on one side of the board and everyone else seemed to be fighting over the East Coast. So
yes, we had a lot going on the East Coast. So for anyone who's unfamiliar with Ticket to Ride, it is a Euro style game, which is kind of defined by, kind of lack of player, not necessarily player interaction, but direct actions against other players. So there's a lot more, you're doing your own thing, I'm doing my own thing, and later we kind of figure out who has the most points, who did their own thing more efficiently. So what it is there's a map of the United States, in this case, and a bunch of cities. And there's these dotted lines, some of them are colors, like red or yellow or purple or pink. I'm colorblind, so I'm assuming all those colors are represented.
They also have some shapes. You can kind of tell, even if you can't see all the colors.
And some of them are gray, so that means they're wild. But they can have one track in between them. They can have up to, I believe, six tracks in between them. And what you're trying to do is everybody has these train pieces, a whole bunch of train pieces in their own color. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to ultimately put your trains on the board in a row between the cities and connect routes. And you get dealt out these route cards at the beginning of the game that are worth points. Say you get from Los Angeles to New York, which is really long. You might get 26 points. But if you're going from like Denver to, I don't know, St. Louis, it might be like 6 points because there's only like two cities in between there. So there's all kinds of different routes. And it really, the points that you get for filling these routes with your train colors are are really dependent on how far you have to go and how complicated it is to get there. But the main mechanism you use to build those routes, put your trains onto the map, is you're drafting cards. So drafting just means to you have a selection of cards or dice or tiles or something that you can see. And in this case, it's open drafting. So that means everyone at the table can see what it is. And you have the option to take one, or in this case, two of those. Unless it's a wild card, you can only take one. So you're drafting cards that are colors that correspond to the colors on the board that are the routes, like red trains and purple trains and pink trains and things like that. And so ultimately you're building up this hand, and then you're turning those cards in sets in order to build these routes. And you have to build a whole route at a time. So if you want this this route between these two cities that has six yellow tracks in between it, you have to turn in six yellow cards in order to place your trains out there. And you also get points for the size of your routes. So you place one train out there and you'll just get 1 point. But if you place six trains out there, you get 15 points. So it's kind of proportional as to how hard it is to get that. So those are really the two ways you get points, is the size of the routes that you're building in between individual cities, and then whole routes that pay off. And Hollis happened to get, got like six or seven cards. I filled three, I think, and I was ecstatic.
So that was what I kind of struggled with about halfway through the game, was I realized that I had already filled the three routes I had initially drawn, or at least two of the three that I had initially drawn. So I was getting kind of close. And one thing that I don't think Bill's mentioned yet is that you don't tell people when your routes are complete. No.
Correct.
Bill might have guessed that I was going from Seattle to Los Angeles based on where all my trains were placed, but it doesn't mean that he necessarily knows that I've completed that train, because maybe I was trying to go all the way down the coast and, you know, through the bottom of the country to get to Dallas. So I thought that was kind of neat. But then I realized, okay, I'm done. What else am I going to do with the rest of the game? So I realized that I could draw more route cards. And so I started drawing route cards, and I realized that I still had one, like, I think I drew another one that said, like, Los Angeles to Phoenix, maybe. And I only needed, like, two more trains to get there. I'd already built most of that connection, or maybe it was Seattle to Phoenix. I don't know. I'd already built most of the connection. So I was like, great. I'm still getting, you know, another 10 points here, another 12 points there on these cards, because, you know, you're continuing to build off the trains you already have. So I really liked that. And then I realized I was the only person that kept drawing these cards. So I think I had six route cards at the end of this. And, you know, I watched some of the other people we were playing with not continue to pick up route cards. And I thought I'd kind of mess myself up. I think, if I'm not mistaken, one of the rules at the end of the game is that any routes that you have at the end that you have not fulfilled, like, let's say someone's blocking you or someone else has gone out, you're stuck with those. And
negative
those,
points.
Yeah, those are detractor points. So that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
So I panicked and I realized, oh no, what if somebody goes out first? But then, you know, the way things worked out, I got kind of lucky and did okay this game. So I'm ready to play again, but that's because I did win the first time.
Right. And that's one of the best things about Ticket to Ride. And I think why so many people like it, and so many people get into the hobby based on that game, is that really on any given day, anyone can win that game. It can be your first time playing and you can win. There is definitely strategy to it. And I think the best, maybe not the best players, but the more experienced players will win more often. But there is that chance. It's not like chess, where if I'm a grandmaster and you're just starting chess, you will literally never beat me.
Like, very true.
No matter what happens, like, even if I start falling asleep, you will not beat me. Like, that just will never happen. But in Ticket to Ride, like, the new player could be playing with experienced players and still win a percentage of the time, just because that's how the game is. And I think that's kind of a cool feature of a lot of of gateway games. And I think one thing that sort of helps define that, which we hadn't talked about before, is kind of that it's not a gatekeepy kind of thing. It doesn't just reward the people who've played the game over and over and over again. You know, the Ticket to Ride professionals. God forbid if that's a thing. But yeah, I in that particular game, I struggled because my brother Alex was playing with us, and
bless his heart,
he and I were kind of going for the same same general direction. So like every time I would just get the card that I need to complete a big route, he would complete it before me, and I'd have to find a way around it. And then he'd be like, "Oh, he's going around. I'm going to block that." And I'd be like, "But you don't need to block that. Like, you're literally hurting yourself just to hurt me." But you know, sometimes people play that way. I like when other people play that way to other people, because I can usually take advantage of that. And while those two people are duking it out with each other, then I can just complete my rounds. But
yeah,
you know, sometimes it happens, and everybody plays the game differently. And that's a cool thing about it, is everyone can play the game differently.
Yeah. In fact, my very first move on the board, my very first train was to, there were two ways in, I think, to Atlanta, or three ways into Atlanta, maybe, mm-hmm. but Nashville only had one spot. One train could go there, not two different
right.
routes from Nashville to Atlanta. So I remember I took one because I knew I needed to get to Atlanta for one route. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if everything else I've got is on the West Coast, I've got to block this.
Yes.
I knew other people might have needed it, but I mean, truly, I hadn't even built a train, I think, in California, which is where most of mine were central to, before I built Nashville to Atlanta. Yeah.
And when people play it a lot, they start looking at where people are building to and kind of make educated guesses. And you do have people sometimes purposely block something. So I try and, especially if I'm on the East Coast there, I try and lock in some of the cities that I need that only have like one or two ways, you know, in or out, without kind of going all winky wonky. And try and solidify those so that nobody can be like, "Oh, I know exactly where he's going. I'm going to cut him off." Because that way they're like, "Oh, I don't know what's going on."
Yeah, it's. So. I was going to say it's. I think you've mentioned this already, but it's Euro in this. It's a kind of a Euro mm-hmm. game in the sense that you're really kind of on your own. You're trying to do your own thing, but if you've played before, or if you've, you know, kind of played games maybe adjacent to this, like, you know, there are ways to kind of have one of those gotcha moments to your you know, fellow players.
Yes. And if you play it three players, it gets really cutthroat, because all of those double routes, the ones that mm-hmm. where there's two train tracks side by side, only one of those is available.
Ooh, that would be brutal.
Two is a little easier because it's still only one of them's available, but there's only two players. And a lot of times you kind of sort of get into this, "All right, you take that side, I'll take this side, we'll stay away from each other," and kind of, you know, we agree to play nice. But a three-player game is absolutely cutthroat. I don't love three-player games, but I will play them, because, you know, they're definitely a lot more stories, I think, with the three-player game than the four. Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's one I've been trying to get you to, been hoping to get you to play for a while. Another one, I think, so moving on from that one, I think, unless you have any other?
No, I mean, comments? Final thoughts, where it's a great game and I think everyone should play it more than once, honestly.
Excellent. Well, we will play it more than once for sure. For sure. So, another one I wanted to talk about, is that we've mentioned prior, but haven't really gone into a ton of detail, and that is Seven Wonders Architects.
Ooh, another great one.
Yes, and for a long time, the original game is Seven Wonders. And for a long time, people would kind of mention Seven Wonders in that vein of Gateway, and then it sort of went into Gateway Plus, and I personally have never thought of it necessarily as a gateway game. It is has a little too much going on for me to want to introduce it to somebody who hasn't played a ton of games. It's not a super, you know, like gamery game, but it can be overwhelming if it's one of the first few games you play. Now, Seven Wonders Architects actually takes the whole concept and really, really, really whittles it down, gets rid of a lot of stuff. And you basically, the idea is that everybody has a civilization. It can play up to sevens, which is really nice. And it doesn't really slow the game down too much to play with that many. But it can. I've played it at two. I've played it at five, I believe. I played it at four. I think I played it at three. I never played it at a full seven, but I hear it plays great. So basically, everybody has a civilization. Like, I might be the Egyptians. You might be the Babylonians. Mm-hmm. And we have these almost like puzzle pieces that are compose our wonder for our civilization. So, like, in my case, it would be the pyramids.
Yeah.
And you would have, like, the Hanging Gardens.
Yeah, they're one of each of the
yes.
seven ancient wonders of the yes. world or something like that.
Seven wonders.
Aptly named, then. Mm.
Indeed. So, everybody has... Everybody's civilization has a deck of cards. And it kind of... leans in one direction as far as like there's different things. There's commerce that you know where you get coins, and there's resources that you use to gather and buy your wonder pieces, because ultimately you're trying to build your wonder.
Yep.
And whoever builds the wonder ends the game, and then you score points.
And if I'm not mistaken, don't they have varying amounts of pieces?
Yes, they do have varying amounts of pieces, and because some of them might have a lot of pieces that are very inexpensive to build, and some might have fewer pieces, but they cost a lot more. So it's very well balanced. But basically, your choice is you can take a card from your right side, from your left side, because there's a deck of cards in between you and each of your neighbors on every side. So... you can take from your left side, you can take from your right side, or you can take from the middle. And the middle is face down, the left and right side are face up.
So you can either take a chance or take, you know,
yeah,
something that you see and, you know, might be able to work with.
Exactly. So you're like, okay, I kind of know what's going on here. And you collect these cards and you turn them in to... do things, to buy things, basically. I know this is a very simplistic way of looking at it, but that's really, in essence, all it is. And so it takes away a lot of the bigger choices that Seven Wonders, the regular game. And if you love Seven Wonders Architects and you play it and you're like, I just want the next thing, then maybe Seven Wonders could be your gateway plus. You know, that sort of that next step in your journey of this is really what I'm into, because it does teach a lot of good things about card drafting, and resource management, where you know you're collecting resources and how do I spend these and which ones do I collect and what do I put them towards, and do I because there's also science cards you can collect that give you powers and things like that. So there's a little bit more to it, but. But it's a lot of good basic mechanisms that are in a lot of other more advanced games.
Yeah. Bill had me play this game pretty early on into, well, one, me playing board games, but two, into us knowing each other. So it was kind of nice that was an introductory game for me. I think it made games like Ticket to Ride a little bit easier, or it gave me a little bit more knowledge kind of into other games. So
right.
Definitely a good one to start with pretty early on.
Yeah. Well, my buddies Corey and Donnie, who are game designers and were on our other podcast, Roasted Games, they're the ones that actually recommended it to me at Gen Con last year.
So nice.
I 2 years ago, actually. So I was very excited to get that, and big thumbs up for that. We are almost done, but I would like to talk about one more, if you have time.
Sure thing.
And that is Trio.
Yeah. That was another good one we played recently.
It was. So Trio is a memory game. to call it a memory game is sort of not doing it justice, because then you just think of like when you're a kid and it's like, you know, Scooby-Doo memory. Is Scooby-Doo on this side or is that Shaggy? Oh, no. But you have, you know what? I think getting into Trio is going to be a great stepping point into the next episode.
Sure.
So
Trio is a good one.
So this is the cliffhanger, guys. If you want to hear about Trio, which will play anywhere from 3 to 6 players, and it's just a card game. It's very, very easy to get into and a great introduction, even for those friends you have that aren't really into games.
Or that kind of tend to zone out when you explain the rules.
Yes, those people too. We all know people like that. We're even related to some people like that. At least I am. So, okay. Thank you for listening. And we'd love to hear from you. If you want to get a hold of us, you can check us out. Check out our website, themeeplepodcast.com. You can also find us on Instagram at themeeplepodcast. And you could even email us at themeeplepodcast@gmail.com. And we will talk to you next time.
Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.